Rajon Rondo is a competitor, and I think it takes a unique personality to coach him. You know, he's shown that he can play in big moments. So it wasn't like he hasn't been there, done that. I was very happy for him to see how he emerged this year as a leader.
Rick Bucher. Rajon Rondo stood up for the young guys on that team. Rondo's impact on that team was so profound that now we're hearing that some of the players, particularly the young players, want to see Rondo back on that team next year.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the 39th episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast. I am Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong. Our guest for this episode will be none other than the legendary, never was an all-star, but may have been one of the best point guards that either one of us has seen, Rod Strickland. And I can't wait to catch up with him because he's still in the game. He's still coaching. I just saw him at the draft combine. But who I'm seeing right now is BJ Armstrong, who I did not see at the combine. I saw everybody at the combine, but I did not see BJ Armstrong, even though rumor has it that we were both in the same city. How did that happen, BJ?
Same city, same hotel. Rick, I'm just always I'm in the shadows. I'm in the background.
People don't realize that, but there's a certain truth to that. No doubt. No doubt. So let's get right to it. The first quarter going around the league. And I wanted to get your take on this. And this is generated by the fact that everybody's seeing what LeBron James is doing right now. And he's not a finalist for MVP. And so Reggie Miller and Chris Webber kind of irked me because they went all outraged about the fact that how's that guy not, you know, one of the three finalists for MVP? Even though Reggie Miller, when he was given his three at the end of the regular season, which is when everybody votes, LeBron James wasn't one of his three then. So this is obviously a result of what LeBron James is doing in the playoffs now. So it got me to thinking, like, we have the all NBA teams. People have issues with that. But who, if you were picking an all-NBA team right now, based on what we've seen
in the playoffs, okay,
who would be your five players?
Are we talking playoffs?
We're talking playoffs. Playoffs?
Yeah, we're talking playoffs.
We're not talking practice.
Yeah.
We're not talking practice. We're talking playoffs.
If we were to go right now based on playoff basketball, mm-hmm, in no particular order, LeBron James, Steph Curry,
okay,
Kevin Durant,
wow,
Draymond Green,
wow,
Kawhi Leonard.
Wow. Three Golden State Warriors and one Cavalier, even though the Cavaliers have done exactly what the Warriors have done. So you're giving a ton of credit to LeBron James, and you're spreading the wealth when it comes to Golden State Warriors.
You asked me the question.
Yeah.
Everyone's playing their role right now.
Right.
Kevin Love is playing excellent basketball. Kyrie Irving is doing,
yep,
his job.
Yep.
You know what I like about what Kyrie is doing in this series? Is this the first time I'm seeing him make an impact on the defensive end?
Hmm.
Okay. The media and, you know, you and I, we tend to look at, you know, you get all the highlights and the praise for offensive, you know, what you do on the offensive end.
Right. Okay, so I had a completely different, I think we only have two players that we agree on. I had,
okay,
LeBron James, I had Kawhi Leonard, John Wall, Bradley Beal, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Now, the difficulty that I had in picking a Warrior is that I couldn't go three Warriors. I just couldn't do it. I feel as if what has made the Warriors so lethal is the way they're playing together. And separating it out and recognizing one of them was, I just decided not to do it. I decided to spread the wealth. Now, I gave it to two Washington Wizards who happened to have been knocked out in the second round by the Boston Celtics. And you would think, okay, Bucher, what are you smoking? Like, how can you do that, right? And I'm not looking at it as the ultimate result. I was impressed with what John Wall did. And I thought this was a coming out party for Bradley Beal. As much as it was for Giannis Antetokounmpo, I felt that it was a coming out party for Bradley Beal. I saw a guy who was competing at both ends and doing it in a way that I honestly wasn't sure that he was capable of. So maybe I'm grading on a curve. Maybe it's who has impressed me the most based on what I thought about them previously, as opposed to just purely what they're doing right now. And that's what prompted me to give you the five that I did. I'm not taking anything away from the three guys you did, but honestly, if you had to pick, like if I forced you, BJ, to pick one guy among the three Warriors, who would you pick?
Draymond Green.
Yeah, and I kind of came to the same conclusion that I would pick Draymond. I believe that he's had the greatest impact of all of those guys.
Well, you know, I certainly want to give praise to, you know, those two guys in Washington. And I agree. I think it was a coming out party. I think they did take a step forward. I really thought that they moved and learned some things as they played and advanced and went to a game seven. But when you start talking about the playoffs, again, there's a certain level that you have to play at. They're not ready yet to play championship caliber basketball. And I felt in watching them that when you have an opportunity to win a game on the road.
Game two.
Game one. They were up. They were up in game one.
Game one. But game two, you had two shots
exactly.
At winning the game. And I thought, I knew that game was going to come back and haunt.
John Wall put up big numbers.
Yep.
Bradley Beal was terrific. But
yep.
We're talking about championship caliber basketball at the highest level.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to disrespect how the Warriors play on the road. Again, the series doesn't begin until you win on the road, okay? And all of these guys that I named have taken their show on the road.
I wonder, and as we move on to our next subject here in the first quarter, I wonder how much of that is you're looking through the prism of KD and Steph and Draymond preparing themselves and demonstrating that they are ready, they're already ready to go to that next level. And obviously, John Wall and Bradley Beal are not going to have an opportunity to prove that they're ready for it. I'm not sure that I would say that they are ready for it. I'm looking at essentially the body of work from each of them based on what they have done to this point, who they had around them, and who they were playing. And I wonder along those lines, with the Cavs and the Warriors, you just talked about championship form. Are the Cavs and the Warriors measuring each other? Like, as these games go back and forth, how much of it is answering what the other team just did against their opponent? How much is it not wanting to extend their series so the other team's going to get more rest than they do? And how much is it looking at what that other team is doing against those opponents and trying to figure out how are we going to either stop that or exploit it? Just how deep is the viewing of those teams, respectively, of each other?
There's an ultimate respect that the Warriors and the Cavs have for one another, because it's fairly obvious as I watch from afar that they're measuring each other for the ultimate showdown. When they win, the Warriors aren't just winning games. They want to send a message. This is what I love about the Warriors right now. They are sending a message that they came to win, and they want to make sure that everyone understands what they're trying to do. They're trying to win the championship this year without question. And they feel that if they do it this year, that they can do it and make a run at this.
What do you mean? Make a run? You mean make, win multiple?
Win
Is that
multiple.
What you're saying?
Yes. Win okay. multiple championships.
Okay.
The Warriors see an opportunity and they're seizing the moment. This is what I love about the Warriors right now. They're seizing the moment. They're not waiting till tomorrow. Every opportunity is an opportunity for them to capitalize now. Hmm. And they're in the moment. I love it.
So along those lines, though, I mean, the Cavs are doing everything that the Warriors are doing, right?
And that's what I was getting to. The Cavs have stepped up their game. They're like, oh,
yeah.
Well, we're the champs.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. We're not going to lay down. We're the champs. And when the Warriors win by 20, the Cavs come back and try to win by 40. Because even though they are playing in separate series right now, they're measuring themselves right now, getting ready for the ultimate showdown. Yeah. I think when these teams finally get a chance to meet, I think this is going to be an epic series. I really do. I think these teams are evenly matched. I think LeBron James is ready for the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I think the teams can counter one another. And I'm excited to see what that will be.
All right, let's move on to the second quarter. This also has to do with the playoffs, because we saw Zaza Pachulia accused by Greg Popovich of not only a dirty play, but being a dirty player. Kawhi Leonard has been hobbled since game one, which the Warriors came back to win with Kawhi Leonard out, having sprained his ankle, landing on Zaza Pachulia's foot after a closeout by Zaza. We have seen Kelly Olynyk accused of being a dirty player for what he did last year, pulling on the arm of, oh no, 2 years ago, pulling on the arm of Kevin Love. There have been all sorts of questions, and I was just thinking, BJ, like I remember and I have talked to guys that back in the 90s, like the dirty plays, the things that guys would do were not incidental. Like you had to play and protect yourself because a dirty play could do some serious damage. And there was retribution to be had, and it was often dealt by the players themselves. So I just wonder, when you see Zaza Pachulia being labeled a dirty player by somebody who's been around as long as Greg Popovich, and I hear Kelly Olynyk is a dirty player. I mean, I think even Draymond Green referenced him as a dirty player. I'm just thinking, we're in a completely different era, because the things that they're doing that are being called dirty is based on the result rather than the actual action. Somebody got hurt, so therefore they did something dirty. You, however, you play, and you have guys who are involved in the game right now. Am I mischaracterizing the difference between dirty then and dirty now?
You know, I spoke to a good friend of mine, Rick Mahorn, earlier in the day, and you're already laughing. No, it is. This is a true story. And Rick asked me. He goes, "Man, it just tickles me." It tickles me to hear that these guys are called dirty today. And yeah, we just bust out laughing, just like you busted out laughing. What really was Bill Laimbeer then, if you're calling Kelly?
My goodness.
And these guys dirty. You remember Jeff Rulin. Remember Rick Mahorn.
Dude, elbows and forearms to the head. Guys were getting, you got clocked. You know what? This is what I don't understand, BJ. Why didn't more guys get hurt back then?
I can tell you why. I can tell you why. It's because when you hit someone then, you expected to get hit right back. See, all of this now going to the referee, going to talk to and telling everybody about who's dirty.
Right.
If somebody hit me, Rick, you had to take that up with that player.
Right.
And I think that gave a level of respect to the game. You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
So if you thought someone did something to you out of character, you know, I can vividly remember Buck Williams came and set a pick on me for no reason at all.
Wait, there was nobody near? The ball wasn't near? He just came and just
Terry Porter was coming down the court, and he just hit me for no reason at all. And I remember thinking to myself, man, I'm mad.
Right.
I'm upset.
Right.
But I got to make a choice here.
Right.
And the choice I made was I'm going to live to fight another day. Because if I would have jumped in Buck Williams' face at that point.
Right. Right.
There was no referee that was going to be come and get in between.
He wasn't
going to
get there fast enough.
Now, I said a few words.
Right. Right.
Did a couple of things. I got a couple hard fouls during the game.
Right. But that was about it.
That was about it.
It wasn't going to be eye for eye.
What could you do? You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got you. See, but not only fight him, but here's the thing. I've always felt that, like, if you allowed Michael, for example, or some of the supreme athletes at that time to play in today's game, the highlights, the moves that they would make, the things that they would do if you couldn't touch them would be out of this world. But when you played then, you knew that the game was physical. So you couldn't, like, the old thing I remember guys saying, like, when you were around the basket, you took off on 2 feet because you knew you were going to take contact.
No question.
And you didn't want to get, like, knocked into the stands, because that would happen, and there might not be a foul called on that play. That's why guys didn't get hurt, because you played in a way to protect yourself because you knew the physicality was coming.
Right. If you didn't have a stop and pop game, you couldn't really play. All right? You couldn't play in the game. But one thing I don't understand about today's guards as they defend, you know, but, you know, I'm not playing, is when a guy got by us, we played defense from behind so that he couldn't shoot a runner or a floater. We played defense from behind to make that guard run into the big, and all the big had to do was show.
Right.
I don't understand how these guys got fadeaway floaters now, runners with left hand, right hand. I mean, it's kind of like a lost, I don't know if it's a lost art or it's not taught. Why aren't we playing defense from behind? I mean, there were certain guys who mastered that art, like Ron Harper and Jordan and Clyde Drexler and Rod Strickland and all of these guys who mastered the art. You mastered that art where you forced people to drive and you forced them to either take one or two dribbles and pull up or take the consequences, which you're going to get a hard foul.
I wonder
how are these guys getting to the basket? Like, I watch Isaiah Thomas of the Celtics. How is he getting all the way to the basket? I don't even understand that.
Well, I will say this is what I've noticed about what Isaiah does. He puts the ball into the defender's chest. He extends his arm with the ball in the defender's chest. If you come down, he's going to move it so that you're now getting contact. There's almost a foul automatically called on any contact when you put the ball into a defender's chest. So the defenders now are kind of backing up like they don't want to get that foul.
Sure.
And then now he has the airspace to hit those floaters or he's going to the free throw line. That's what he and Harden and guys are able to do. I also wonder if it's because the three-point shot has become so prevalent.
That's a good point.
When you get beat, like you're being asked to V out to guard, like somebody's going to step up and take yours rather than chase that guy. You're V-ing out and covering another three-point shooter that guy would have been chasing out to if he wasn't helping you.
I remember you.
It's a different game though, right?
It's a totally different game. But I would love to see if it would work though, because you know, what these guys are doing, especially at the guards, like there's really no way to defend them, but at least take something away. If a guy's going to drive to the basket, at least have the threat of you stripping the ball away. He just can't shoot threes and drive to the basket and get and one.
Yep.
But, you know, it's a different game. And, you know, just from afar, I just remember that art. It was an art. You took great pride in trying to get as many deflections and swipe that ball from behind, because if the big shows, you got a chance to get it.
All right. That is the end of the second quarter. It is now time for Shane Freeman, our producer, to take over and provide you with the halftime entertainment. Enjoy.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, welcome to the Halftime Break on the BJ and Bucher Podcast, episode 39. And before we get into our interview with Rod Strickland and our third quarter trivia challenge, I want you guys to check out this KRS-One, Step Into a World. If you know anything about NBA 2K Live and hip hop, then you know this record. Enjoy.
Yes, y'all, you don't stop. KRS-One, rock on. Yes,
Hope you enjoyed that entertainment. It is now time for the third quarter. BJ and I are rested up. We are ready to go. We're coming out of the locker room. And I just looking at these questions, I have a feeling that Shane has done some dirty work on us. Let's go with it. I am the only player, BJ, on this list who did not make the 1991-92 season All-NBA first team. Who am I? Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, David Robinson, or Chris Mullin?
He didn't make the
He did not make the 91-92 season All-NBA first team. Who among
I'm gonna say Chris Mullin.
And that would be incorrect. That would have been almost the automatic for me. It was actually, and this is an amazing one. Good job, Shane. Charles Barkley. That's the year before he was traded to the Phoenix Suns. The year before he was traded. Might have had something to do with why he wanted to get out of Philadelphia. All right, BJ, what do you got for me?
I am the only player on this list to not make the 1993-94 All-NBA first team. Who am I? Karl Malone, John Stockton, Kevin Johnson, Latrell Sprewell.
Well, you know what? I know it's not Sprewell. I know he made that team that year. 93-94. That was actually one of the few years that the Warriors were good. So it was Karl Malone, John Stockton. Who was the third?
Kevin Johnson.
Kevin Johnson of the Phoenix Suns. Now, they went to the championship the year before. Sometimes these things have a carryover effect. 93-94. I'm going to say John Stockton.
That would be incorrect.
Damn it. Kevin Johnson?
Kevin Johnson.
I knew it was one or the other. Damn! All right.
Way to go, Shane.
Stumping us, Shane. I give you credit. Which duo of teammates made All-NBA first team in the 93-94 season? Shaq and Penny, Stockton and Malone, Kemp and Schrempf, or Peyton and Kemp? Which duo made All-NBA first team?
Oh, wow. 93-94, right?
Mm-hmm. Shaq and Penny, Stockton and Malone, Kemp and Schrempf, or Peyton and Kemp?
In 93-94.
Yeah.
Woo! I'm just going to take a guess. I'm just going to totally guess here.
Yeah.
93-94. I think that's the Orlando. I think that's the year they went to the finals, if I remember correctly. Isn't that the year they went to the finals? And then we have Garrett. Now, I'm just going to say Shaq and Penny.
That would be incorrect. I can't believe you went that direction based on the question you just asked me. He gave you Stockton and Malone. Who was the guy who didn't, right? Stockton and Malone were two of the choices on the last question, right?
Yeah.
And so they weren't on it.
They made it.
Right.
Yeah.
By
Man,
virtue.
You're right.
He gave you one. And the answer is
Stockton and Malone.
All right. You know what's really bad is if I don't win now. That's really bad. How bad do I look if I don't win now?
All right, here we go. Which player on this list does not have more first-team All-NBA selections than Michael Jordan? LeBron James,
Jesus,
Karl Malone, Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant.
Let me make sure I have this right. So three of these guys all have more first-team selections than Michael Jordan. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Can you give me the names one more time?
LeBron James, Karl Malone, Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant.
Does not have more.
This is an easy one.
LeBron James. Give me the four one more time just so I don't hear you singing.
Oh. LeBron James.
Yep.
Karl Malone.
Yep.
Tim Duncan.
Yep.
Kobe Bryant.
Well, it's not. I know Tim Duncan did because they had this issue of him being listed as a power forward so that they made sure that he continued to be recognized that way. You know what? I'm just going to... Kobe Bryant.
That would be incorrect.
Damn it! What's so easy? LeBron?
It was Tim Duncan.
What?
Yeah. You tried to go at me. Okay, you ain't paying attention.
You know what? This is where I screwed up. The Spurs' issue with him being listed as a power forward or a center had to do with the All-Star selection, not all NBA. I'm such an idiot. Do we have a tiebreaker? Not that we deserve a tiebreaker, but do we have a tiebreaker?
You should get this one.
Okay.
Which of these guys is not on the list of three players with 15 total all-NBA selection?
Say that again, Shane. Say that again.
Which of these players is not on the list of three players with 15 total all-NBA selections? This is not first, second, or third or anything. It's just total.
Right. The number of times that they've been all-NBA, one of the three teams.
Right.
So this is the guy who doesn't have
15 selections. Okay.
Okay.
Kobe Bryant, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Shaquille O'Neal, or Tim Duncan?
I'm going to say Kobe Bryant.
Doesn't have 15. How many did Jordan have?
No, Jordan didn't play 15 years, I don't think.
All right. So, so Shaq, Kobe, who are the other two?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Tim Duncan.
I'm going to say Tim.
That would be incorrect. The answer is Shaquille O'Neal. He's actually tied with Karl Malone as the only
with only 14?
Yeah, with 14.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, because once he fell off, he wasn't making any. Yeah, it's probably from 2005-06 onward. He didn't make an All-Star team. I mean, make an All-NBA team. You got one more?
Yep, I got one more.
Okay.
All right, this person is the only player with 13 All-NBA selections in the history of all NBA honors. All NBA selections, not for one, two, or three, just 13, period.
This is the only guy who's been on the teams 13 times?
Yes. Just 13 flat.
He's the only one who's been exactly 13?
The only one.
That's weird. Okay. What an odd... Okay.
Dirk Nowitzki.
Yep.
Bob Cousy, Jerry West, or LeBron James?
13 exactly.
I'm just saying Cousy. I'm just pure guessing.
And I'll just say West. Pure guessing.
Man, this is a tie, man. This is LeBron James.
The winner this week is Shane.
Yes. Like, not only, I mean, this is like game two, Cavs versus Celtics. Not only beat
up,
us, but embarrassed us. All right. So enough of that. Time for the fourth quarter and our guest, the great Rod Strickland. He needs no introduction, but we'll give it to you on the other side. Here comes the fourth quarter, and here comes Rod. It's now time to welcome our very special guest for the BJ and Bucher podcast, one Rod Strickland. I knew him from a couple different places, but I covered him directly when he was with the Washington Wizards. That was a good time. Man, was that a good time. Assist leader in 1998, played from 1988 to 2005. You to me are the greatest player that was never named an All-Star. And if there's something wrong with the All-Star selection process for me, it's the fact that you never were one, because I think I speak for both BJ and myself, but I loved watching you play. I thought you were a consummate point guard. I thought you were a killer. And the fact that the league never recognized that to the fullest extent, I think was a miscarriage of justice. All that said, when you look back at your career and you didn't get that accolade, how do you look back and look at the fact that you never got that recognition?
Well, first of all, I appreciate that. Thank you. Glad to be on with y'all guys. I always think about that. You know, my boys, my sons now, they hoop. And, you know, we watch basketball and, you know, they get to read stuff to say I was, you know, one of the players who should have made the All-Star team or one of the best players that didn't make the All-Star team. And so I reflect on that sometimes. And, you know, at the end of the day, I definitely think there were some years that I could have easily been an All-Star.
Right.
And I wish things would have been different, because I love to have that before my name, All-Star Rod Strickland or Rod Strickland All-Star. Mm-hmm. But it didn't happen. And, you know, I think a lot of it, and, you know, just to be quite honest, probably had a lot to do with probably professionalism. You know, I don't think the coaches had, they were the ones who really made the decisions. So I think because of some things that happened, you know, I just think they just didn't pick me for those reasons. You know what I mean? I don't even think it had anything to do with my performance.
Right.
You know, because I think everyone knew, you know, I mean, when I was on the court, I played hard, I played to win. I was unselfish. I had good numbers. You know, I played on some winning teams, some losing teams. So I don't even think it was a basketball thing. I think it was a personality thing. They might not have liked my approach or, you know, the way I went about things. I don't know. But it definitely wasn't, it couldn't have been just basketball.
Sure. Like
basketball-wise, you know, I tell people, if you put my numbers with all the players in the 90s, all the point guards, rather, they're comparable.
Yep, for sure. So, do you, now you can call yourself an all-pro, because 98, you did make all-NBA second team, which I just find hilarious that you could be one of the best 15 in the league, but not one of the best 24. Like, okay, somebody explain that to me. But is that any consolation where you go, hey, okay, so I could have made it multiple times to the All-Star game, but you know what? I got something that even a lot of All-Stars never get, which is All-NBA.
Yeah, well, it's sitting in my, you know, sitting right on my little cabinet, you know, right up top. You know, I'm proud of that, you know, to be, you know, considered, I mean, second All-NBA team, so to be considered one of the top 10 players that year. I mean, that's a big accomplishment. So I'm proud of that. And, you know, but I'm one of them guys. It is what it is. You know, like I said, I reflect. I wish it would have happened differently. But, you know, now it's on. You know, you move on. You know, move on to the next thing.
Well, Rod, I can tell you, they may not have, when I say they, the media might not have voted you as an All-Star, but everyone in them uniforms that played against you, they knew what was coming when they saw Rod Strick.
Yeah.
They knew that. Hey, he might not have been shooting threes like they was today, but they knew he was getting in that paint, and there was nothing we could do about it. So you definitely was an All-Star. But I want to ask you, Rod, you're watching these playoffs. As we change gears here, you're watching Cleveland. You're watching Golden State. You're seeing what these guys are doing. How do you see this playing out in the next round in the finals between those two powerhouse teams right now?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping, and I think it will be a great series. You know, these conference championships have been pretty tough, pretty brutal, you know, with injuries and, you know, just being overmatched. It's been tough, but I think, you know, I think the championship becomes personal. You know, Golden State won the first one. Cleveland came back from 3-1 deficit last year and won a championship. Kevin Durant now moving from Oklahoma City, you know, he has something to prove. It's a lot on the line for him and his reputation. You know, Steph Curry has come up a little short, you know, in the championship series. So, you know, it's going to be personal to him. Mm. You know, he has to regain that kind of stature in the championship series. And then you got LeBron, he's fighting to be the best ever. You know, he wants to keep growing his accomplishments. And then you got Kyrie, who's proven, you know, keep proving everybody that he's the best, one of the best, if not the best. So I think there's a lot of storylines, and I think it'll be a real competitive series.
Rod, you're now coaching, and I wonder, have you coached a Rod Strickland? Have you coached a player that reminds you of yourself?
That's funny. No. I haven't, but I coach some personalities that remind me. I'm trying to find the player and the personality. But it's funny because I, you know, some guys, like I look at Derrick Rose when he was at Memphis, and he always kind of reminded me of me.
Yeah.
You know, even his temperament. You know, because D Rose is really kind of shy to himself, kind of introverted dude. Like, he doesn't like all attention, you know what I mean? And then he had to get to the basket, get in the lane to finish. Obviously, way more athletic than I was. But he reminded me of myself. And then John Wall, just, you know, getting in the paint and finishing plays. But those dudes are so much more athletic. But just the match of the game and the personality, nah, not yet. I'm still looking for him.
Rod, your pregame meal became legendary status. Can you set the record straight?
Rob, what was your pregame meal? I mean, we've heard a lot of different things. I want you to set the record straight.
Hey, Rob, keep in mind, I covered you. I covered you, Rob, so you better bring it straight.
Hey, listen, I already know I cannot lie about this. Rick Bucher was there, and I really wouldn't lie about it because I keep telling people, what difference does it make? Once I got on the court and I got through the nerves and I threw up before the game, which I did before 95% of the games because of nerves. Once I stepped on the court, I played hard and I played to win. But yeah, to this day, I'm weird. One of my agents told me, he said, you're a freak of nature. He's like, just the things you do and everything and to do what you do on the court, like you was a freak of nature. And I did. I would eat popcorn. I would eat pizza. I would eat hot dogs. I'm going to tell you what's so funny. And when I was growing up, and this is a little off for the food, but when I was growing up, I used to always come to the games late, like right before the tip-off started. I might wear some low-cut Air Force Ones. Like, I always tried to prove that I can do whatever and still just outplay you. And I just think, and it's weird, but I just felt like, it doesn't matter. I'm on the court, no matter what I'm eating, no matter what time the game starts. If I was here 30 seconds before the game, I'll never forget I had to go to New York one time. I had to take care of some stuff, and I came and I flew into Milwaukee. And I think it was like the fourth quarter. They put me in the game, and I just played right away, just straight off the train. So I just always felt like, once you get on the court, whatever you did right before that, you was fine. I was fine. And I'm not condoning that at all now. But I'm just saying.
So pizza, hot dogs, that was part of it.
Oh, yeah.
When the game started rolling, that's what it is what it is.
There was a post-game ritual, too, having covered Rod for a year. So I remember one time walking into the locker room, and he's taking out new shoes out of a pair of out of a shoebox, new clothes. He still got like the tags on it, and you were just rolling in time for the game, and you sent one of your boys out to get clothes for you so you could go out afterwards.
Hey, listen, man, I can't dispute any of that, man. I cannot dispute. And anybody who knows me is probably laughing right now if they're listening to me. Because that's right on point. That's true. That's true. I was definitely capable of that.
Hey, it impressed me. I thought it was the coolest thing ever, man. I mean, this dude, my boys are going to take care of it. So this is the question I have, though, because of the way you approached it. What made you decide that you wanted to coach? Like, because that's a thankless, I think you were all about the game. And to me, coaching keeps you in the game, but it's really about doing for other, now you got to be kind of the one setting the tone and discipline and taking care of the nitty gritty, which I never thought that would appeal to you.
Right. Well, a lot of people say that they would have never thought of me coaching, but a lot of people didn't really know me. I'm a big-time basketball guy.
Right.
I know the history of the game. I knew the guys who played. I knew everybody. But as from a point guard, and I was an unselfish player. So whatever you thought about the other things, I always had an unselfish way about me. So, going over to coaching, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
For me, it's like giving back. I've done all this. I've accomplished a lot of things. I've made some mistakes. Like for me, I think I fit right into that because I think I have a lot to give back on both sides of it. And I'm authentic to these kids. So I don't have to fake it. I don't have to act like I did it. I don't have to act like I know. You know what I mean? Whether it's between those lines or off those lines, like outside of the lines, like I've done it all. So to me, I think it's natural. Everybody looks at it now everybody's kind of come to grips with it. But I know in the beginning, I remember Greg Popovich was like, oh my God, Rod Strickland is coaching. but for me, it's natural, because I've always been an unselfish basketball player. And I've always been a basketball guy. I studied the game. I know the game, so
yeah,
it's natural to me.
That makes sense.
But Rob, before I let you go, I think you're going to be a fabulous coach because you are, I think you said it, you're a giver. You've always been a giver. Mm-hmm. And what people don't know that, you know, I think, you know, that we all know is that you're a basketball lifer. And mm-hmm. you love the game and all of the other things never got in the way of your love and passion for the game. And I think that came through throughout your career. But one last question for you. Is there a player today that you would pay to see that's running that point guard position or just playing period because of your love for the game and your appreciation for the game itself?
Well, there's a lot of guys I would pay to see, but like the guys, you know, I mean, I watch Kyrie and I watch Steph, you know, as a point guard, you know, those are the entertainers to me. You know, at the end of the day, they cold, they can play, they winners, but they entertainers. You know, sometimes you watch this game and, you know, it's fundamentals and playing the right way. And, you know, we love that part of it. But when you got those extra special guys who can just kind of fundamentally sound, know the game, winners, but can entertain, like those guys I want to see. So, you know, I always tell my boys, like, if Kyrie's on TV and Steph's on TV and you ain't watching, something wrong with you. You're in a basketball player. So, like, you got to watch those guys.
So before we let you go, and Rod, really appreciate it, and I can't tell you when I saw you at the mm-hmm. Combine, it was just so good to see you again.
Definitely good to see you.
Many people may not know, you are the godfather to Kyrie Irving, mm-hmm. Not just in basketball mm-hmm. terms, but like in real life, you're the godfather to mm-hmm. Kyrie. So mm-hmm. what is mm-hmm. the role of Rod Strickland as godfather to Kyrie? Do you have any responsibilities or you got any perks or what's the deal, man?
Yeah, you know, no perks and responsibility. That's just family, man. Like me and his father, like we grew up together. We grew mm-hmm. up since the third grade. Hmm. You know, we spent all our lives, you know, we from Mitchell Project. Hmm. So, I mean, we spent every day of our lives together. We probably spent more time together than we spent with our own families, you hmm. know, because we were outside all the time. And then growing up, we played basketball with the Gauchos, AAU, you know, in high school. You know, then we separate, you know, went our ways in college. But then the pros, like they were there. You know, you may not remember Rick, but I can guarantee you he was in Washington a whole lot.
Yeah.
And he was at those games.
Yep.
You know, so it's family, you know. And Kyrie, you know, I'll never forget Kyrie was little. I'll never forget him coming to my house. And I remember him saying, wow, you know, like this is like MTV Cribs or whatever. And I said, and he was in high school. And I said, you keep playing like this, you're going to have like 10 of these.
Huh. You know right. what
I mean?
Huh.
And so, I mean, he's just special. But, you know, I've seen the journey. You know, me and his father have known each other since third grade. So I've seen the journey with him and his father. I've seen the upbringing. I know what kind of kid he is. I know his background. You know, I know what he's made of. Mm. And I've watched him. I never forget he came to Kentucky on a recruiting visit. And I watched him deal with the administration and everybody. And I remember calling Deji like, man, yo, I'm so proud of you, you know, mm. for raising him the way he is now. Because I got a chance up close to watch him. You know, like as that 18-year-old kid, but he acts so grown. And I watch him, and I, you know, he's been through his things in Cleveland. You know, there's been turmoil, and it's been hard, sure. and it's been rough. But I've watched him handle that, man. And he's never shook. You know what I mean? He's always positive, poised, and you know that's just a testament to his family, man.
Sure.
And you know that's family, man. I love him to death, and I'm proud. Like I'm the proud, you know, from the distance, just proudly just watching him, man, watching him grow, and watching him becoming one of the best, you know, point guards probably at the end of the day to ever play this game.
Well, I have to say that I certainly am proud and honored that I get to call you a friend that we can have on the podcast.
Absolutely.
I know BJ feels the same way.
Absolutely. But I want to thank y'all for having me, man. And Rick, you know, we go back. You've always been a good dude. You always reported it how you reported it, but always with integrity, and I always appreciated that. And BJ, you know you my dude, man.
That's my...
I got a lot, man.
We got to make sure that we plug You know, Rod has his own podcast.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
He's got it.
So yeah. You know, where can they find that?
Strictly speaking, it's on theshadowleague.com.
Okay.
And yeah, I got to get you guys on that eventually. I have like 9 episodes. I've had Stephon Mulberry.
Oh, yeah. So once you get done with Robinson, the big rollers, once you get done with the high rollers, yeah, we'll be available. Give us a call, man.
I'm systematically setting it up, man. I know what I'm doing, man. It's a method to my madness.
I hear you. Well, hey, in the meantime, we're going to put it out there that you're available as a coach for whoever might college or pro. We'll make sure that we advertise that. Rod, thank you, my man.
Rod, thanks for taking the time.
You got it,
definitely, buddy. Man. Thanks. Appreciate y'all.
Hope you enjoyed that conversation. I know that I did. Remember, if you're listening from iTunes, subscribe to the show. You can also rate and leave a review. It's really important for us to hear what you have to say, whatever it may be, positive or negative. You can also check out our website, bjandbuecher.com. We got a lot of stuff over there, video, podcasts, written articles from people around the world. And as always, you can follow us on our Twitter page at bjandbuecher. BJ, as always, good time. Let's do it again next week.
See you next week.